Welcome to the All Central Podcast. I'm your host, Pastor Larry Kirk. I'm joined today by Jonathan Protheroe from the great country
of Great Britain.
Of Great Britain.
You're getting better and better at that surname. Yeah. Well done. Jonathan Protheroe.
Protheroe. Got it. Got it going today. Man, we had a good time yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Woo! It's always a good day. We got to go out and play.
We got to play golf yesterday.
Play golf.
It was so much fun, but for a good cause.
For a great cause. But before we get into the cause, Larry's game, it's getting there.
It's getting there. And the key is not to practice.
Because you haven't played in about 4 months.
Yeah.
But you managed to do something that the marshal said he has never, ever seen before. A man who works on a golf course all day.
Yeah. All day.
He looked and you said, I've never seen that before.
And that was me leaving my driver on one of the holes. Now I'll come with a caveat with that. The only reason was because I like Jonathan's driver better because it's way newer. Mine is junk. And I was like, I need to try that. You know, and so I just threw mine down. Like I just tossed it. Like I was throwing it away.
I was getting ready to go. Everyone blames the equipment. Yeah. I can't hit it as far as you because you've got a better driver. Yeah, but then you stepped up and hit my driver. Yeah. Hit the driver the day. You smoked it down there.
That's true. That's true. I was hitting the ball pretty good off the tee yesterday for a change.
For a change.
Yeah. Yeah. I take 50 yards off my drive just to get it to the center of the fairway, but it gets to the center of the fairway yesterday. It did a lot. I did quite well
put
yesterday.
Put us in play many times. That, it's good. You know, it always feels good when you can contribute to a few shots here and there.
It's true.
In a scramble.
It's true.
But no, it was for an awesome cause, raising money for a couple in our church.
Yeah.
And so, who are in need. So that was great.
It was great. It was great. I'm not going to tell you who the weak link was in our foursome, but...
Yeah, Jeff.
Oh, man, I hope Jeff doesn't listen to the podcast.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a test, right?
It's a good little test to see if he actually listens to
this. If our staff listens to our podcast or not.
Jeff Linton, by the way. We were so excited because he got to tee up from the senior tees and he bombs it.
And he does bomb it. And he bombed
not so
it
much yesterday. Okay. Anyway, enough about golf shenanigans.
That's right. Man, what a great speaker we had in this past week, Pastor Aaron Burke from Radiant Church, Tampa, Florida.
Yeah. If you don't know who he is, you're hiding under a rock somewhere.
Yeah.
Get onto his social media. His social media, we got to meet Brandon, his social media guru as well, who is killing
it. Brandon's awesome.
Absolutely killing it. But what a great message. So, I think we were going to sort of deep dive into some of the points and thoughts.
Yeah, we are. We are. It was a good good story of Joseph. And he actually has I don't have a book with me. So this is not good. I should have brought the book in.
The Unfair Advantage.
Yeah, Unfair Advantage.
Aaron Burke.
Yeah. I should have showed that to you guys, but I don't have it with me. But yeah, really good book. And it's all about the life of Joseph and what he had to go through. And a lot of it stemmed from a statement that he was praying about for a particular person that he knew in his life that there was just so much unfair stuff that happened to her that he was just crying out to God for that person. Like, God, so unfair. And then God like spun that around. Like, well, wait a minute. I take unfair things in people's lives and I make it good.
Yes.
Like this is working for her good.
Right.
And it was like, boom.
It's a power. Yeah.
That's where it came
from. Yeah. The whole book birthed out of this one encounter.
One encounter.
Like, like God acknowledging what Aaron felt like God was acknowledging. Yeah. It is unfair.
Yeah.
But it's to her advantage, I think was the word, the phrasing that he used.
That is correct.
And I thought, I mean, that's exactly true.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that. Because there's how many times, I mean, I'm not going to out you right now, but I mean, we just talked about something just a second ago. Like, it's like, God, what is going on here in my life personally? You don't have to say anything. I'm just saying it is unfair. You know what I'm saying? Like it is like, come on.
Right.
You know, what's going on here?
We've just been having a week. It was just like, yesterday was Tuesday and I was already losing it. One thing after the next, we woke up and there was flooding going on in our basement and all sorts of stuff. one thing after the next, you know, IDs getting hacked and, you know, it just felt like I actually like I was in the bathroom. Amanda was behind me. I'm cleaning up all picking up all of our wet clothes and things that are underwater.
Yeah.
I threw something down. I said, God, we tithe like a spoiled little child. Yeah. Like that's the reason we tithe so that this doesn't happen to me. And of course it was joking, but it was also a little bit of truth in there. Like just letting it out.
We've all done it though. That's the thing. Yeah. We've all done that. We've all felt that.
Right.
Even if we haven't expressed it in that moment we know, you know, your mind goes there.
Right.
Like God, aren't I righteous? Yeah. I just read the Bible all week and you're you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And,
I'm a good person. Yeah. I do. I'm a good Christian. I serve you. I don't deserve this. It's unfair. You know, is that thing that we all want to say when things aren't going our way.
Yeah. Be childlike, not childish, right? that's the...
You're calling me out.
I'm calling myself out too. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, there's moments where we're so childish about stuff. And you're like, you look back on it like, oh man, that was so childish.
So childish.
It's amazing that God can still use us. Amen.
Amen. I mean, the childness lasted for, it lasted for 5 seconds. And then I was just... you know, then you kind of just laugh about it. What else can you do? Otherwise you're going to get frustrated. But that's a silly example. But then there are things that really do go wrong where it's much more serious. Like like this woman he was praying for, like really big things she was dealing with. It's like, no, this is really unfair.
Yeah.
This isn't just like an annoyance or an inconvenience for the day.
It's kind of like going into the story that, you know, that Aaron talked about, the story of Joseph, you know, and it's not that Joseph did anything wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he did a lot right.
Yeah.
And he talked about that, which is a story that you and I have unpacked before. Mm-hmm. Actually on stage, I think together one time we talked about how Joseph went from the pit to the platform, you know, that kind of thing. And
prison to the palace.
Yeah. Prison to the palace and all those catchphrases. But the in between is, and how he reacted to those things and how he lived his life in the midst of that, did not seem like too childish. He didn't have too many childish moments going through all of that unfair stuff that happened to him.
No, the worst you can accuse him of is in the beginning as he shares his dream.
Yeah.
You know, I think he uses the word me about 10 times.
But wouldn't you think that was just such a young person slip up? Like
totally.
If you were a young person and I can't remember, what was the age that he had that dream? I think he alluded to that, didn't he?
Yeah, he's a teen, probably teenage, 17 or something like that.
I mean, you have a dream that, you know, one day your brothers, your siblings are going to bow down to you.
Yeah.
I mean.
Be quiet about that.
Yeah, right. But there's no wisdom at 17. Like zero. Zero wisdom at 17. Right. Like I'm gonna tell everybody.
Yeah.
This is going to be awesome.
And it's not even like us. Yeah. We're all self-centered at that age.
Sure, sure.
You know, we all have to deal with it. But it's the length of time he sits in the unjust and the unfairness.
Yeah.
I think that's the convicting thing is I struggled with it for 2 days. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's year after year after year. And he made a point I never thought of as well. He said, even when he was promoted to the palace, you know, he gives this prophecy, 7 years of famine, then or 7 years of abundance, and then followed by seven years of famine. Yeah. In that 7 years of abundance, that's pretty nerve-wracking thinking, what if I'm wrong about this? For 7 years, that's we're storing up, we're functioning differently, we're strategizing differently as a government, you know, we're piecing things together, all under my say-so. Mm. And for 7 years, even out of the prison, he has to be super humble and trust God that he is right about this. I would be terrified.
That's pressure, man.
That's a long time to be under that pressure, wondering if you've got it right or wrong.
Yeah. But at least there was abundance. That was happening. Yes. But what about the other part? Is that shoe going to drop?
Right.
And what I said is going to come true or whatever that God spoke to my heart about. And I mean, it's a great story. If you never read anything about Joseph in the Old Testament, pick up the book of Genesis, read it. It is a phenomenal story.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a phenomenal story
of
unfair situations, but how God turns it for the good.
Yeah.
Turns it for the good. And, you know, he made a statement. I want to read this because I don't want to get this wrong. I'm pretty sure this is how it went because I was taking some notes. He says, if your dream isn't in its mature state, it's probably because you aren't either.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. That dropped in the room like heavy.
You get like the wind got sucked out of everybody at that moment. Right?
So everyone went, why.
That's why it's a wreck right now.
Yeah. There's some maturing that had to happen in his life.
Yeah.
Exactly. And God had to take him through, you know, this sort of self-centered teen to somebody who was willing to serve a nation and give his life essentially to serve something greater than himself. And that, like he said as well, is a long process. It's not something that happens overnight. Yeah. You know, it's brick by brick. He used this analogy of a Lego, Legos, and it's just piece by piece. God gives us the raw material. He doesn't give us the Legos pre-built.
That's right.
And I think that's exactly true with our lives. It's piece by piece, and we can get a miracle or a vision of what it's meant to look like. Mm-hmm. But God, I think T.D. Jakes put it this way. He said, God doesn't give us the boat. He gives us the tree.
Yeah.
He gives us the raw material.
Yep.
And we still have to craft it. So inside of there is the ability to create, which, you know, we're created in God's image. Mm-hmm. So we have the ability to imagine a tree as something else, mm-hmm. as a vessel to take us all around the world.
Yeah.
But it still has to be craft and honed, and there needs to be understanding about how to use wood in a certain way and to craft it and to piece it together. And that takes experimentation. Yeah. It takes years and years and years of wisdom and knowledge and understanding and work and craft and mastery. All of these things have to come together to find a finished product.
Yeah.
And we're no different.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's like you wanna be an oak tree. But he gives you an acorn.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got to like take that acorn and you got to plant it.
Right.
You got to water it. You got to protect it. You got to make sure no other animals are coming around eating it when it's in its small form.
Right. In its infancy.
It's tiny and it's growing. And you know, you have deer around and they're taking their antlers and scraping on it, you know, and trying to ruin it. Yeah. Just any kind of thing that would it's just in its infancy, like you said, and that part of just growing that it takes time and it takes effort, it takes work, and I think that's why Scripture tells us too, like work out your salvation, you know, and because it takes work
with fear and trembling,
yes, but it takes work,
right.
You know, not working for your salvation, but working out your salvation, and I think a lot of people that would get a dream like that or have a goal like that, which is great. I think it should be a vision, a dream that's in your heart that you want to accomplish, but don't think it's just going to come to you one day and just drop in your lap.
Yeah.
Like you got to do the work.
Yeah.
You got to do the work.
It's so true.
Yeah.
He said something, slight segue here. He said something I'd never really heard before. The prison system.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
this
is, I would have to do some study on this, but you know, he said he has, so I'll take him at his word. The idea that when Joseph was thrown into prison, the way Egyptian prisons worked,
yes,
you can even take a step back and say prisons didn't really exist, mm-hmm. You know, 3,000-4,000 years ago. So what they would do is, yes, you were in prison, but prison wasn't so much about punishment as it was about, reintegrating people back into society.
Yeah.
So the idea was, if you'd stolen something or you got thrown into prison for whatever reason, then you would be educated in prison and you weren't released until they felt like you were educated enough to come back and be able to add something to society. And I, you know, this was profound, had a profound impact on me, you know, because I grew up in a very different kind of nation from America, mm-hmm. where that's more the model. It's about how do we help? I mean, there's a place for punishment, and this is where the debate needs to come in. I think it'd be interesting talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, where's the place for punishment versus the place of if we treat people like animals, don't be surprised when they come out and act like animals.
Yeah.
Like, are we making our prisoners worse? When I say worse, are we degrading and mm-hmm. dehumanizing their character and value as human beings by the way that we punish and treat them?
Yeah.
As opposed to figuring out a different way to punish.
A way to rehabilitate, a way to change their thinking.
Re-educate.
Because, you know, Scripture tells us that too, right?
Right.
If you're going to change your life, you got to change the way you think.
Exactly.
You know,
Where's the redemptive purposes?
The redemptive, yeah.
Because, you know, I'm of the opinion that anybody who breaks the law, unless you're wrongfully accused, of course, if you do it intentionally, that you break it because you were taught certain things along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take a 13-year-old and they get mixed up in drugs and gangs, and by the time, you know, they're 20, they end up in prison, well, okay, they do need to be punished, but there also needs to be some understanding around the way that they've been taught, mm-hmm. mentored their whole life. Mm-hmm. And because it's only been geared towards...
And the problem with prison systems is it just continues to recycle that thought in prison.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
And we treat them like animals, just no different to how they've been treated their entire life.
Yeah.
And they just come out harder. Mm-hmm. They come out, mm-hmm. you know, having worked out because they've got nothing else to do but to get bigger muscles and to be violent, and to be to protect themselves. So do they come out? Are we? It depends what the goal is. If the goal is punishment, okay, fair enough, we punish them. Mm-hmm. But if the goal is a healthier society and community, then maybe we need to rethink about how we punish. And it's just a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think there's some wisdom there. Of course, there are some people that do atrocious things and you just think, look, I'm not going to spend money to educate a rapist.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't feel like, that doesn't feel, something doesn't sit right within me spending more taxpayer money to kind of educate that person when we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to educate our own children.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think there's a lot of cases, the vast majority of people in prison just need a re-education.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I don't know how you unscramble scrambled eggs.
Right.
But that's our prison system, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know how you would go about doing that. You'd have to really get harsh with certain things and like there's a line drawn in.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it would be a mess, but it would be something that I think our, I want to say our government,
meant to. Are prisons privatized in America, or are they government?
I don't know. I'm sure they're funded by the state, I would imagine.
Right.
I think.
I got a producer private back there.
Are they private?
I guess there are funded federal states.
Federal, yeah.
Right. Federally. So there's probably both.
Mm-hmm.
But the reform, you know, to reform prison, I think would be huge. Like, again, this isn't a big sort of, don't hear this as a big sort of slam on Americans, but no civilization in history has ever incarcerated more of its own civilians than America.
No question. Yeah.
And that's an unreal statistic.
I guess some of that I think would be, the amount of people that we have in this country,
but percentage wise,
we still are the top.
Like, it's not even close.
Yeah.
It's a big margin. Yeah. It's slightly off topic talking about Joseph. It just made me think about how do Christians get involved in helping, reform people, which is what we're doing, right? This is what Jesus was all about. He was about taking the crook and the prostitute and the person who broke all kind of moral code and law and said, you know what, that there's a place if you are willing to open yourself up to change.
And that's what was so unfair about Joseph's is he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything wrong and still was thrown in that situation.
That's such a hard thing when you do the right thing and it gets worse.
Right, exactly.
When you tithe and your basement floods.
Yeah, or your car breaks down.
Your
transmission goes up. I just talked to a friend of mine the other day, and he just bought this truck maybe 2 years ago, and his transmission went up on it.
Brand new truck.
$6,000 he had to pay for a tranny. Transmission. Yeah, that's a whole different terminology nowadays, right? Transmission.
Yes.
The thing that shifts in your vehicle.
$6,000. He's bought a brand new car, and two months later, he's pouring $6,000 into the brand new car. No warranty?
No warranty on it, no. He bought it used, still within the mileage was right on it.
It just
went up. He had to pay $6,000. And he's such a person he is so detailed about stuff and you know giving it, you know, he tithes, he's a generous person with his life, like everything, and yet
it's unfair.
Man, it's just unfair. Right, it is, it's unfair,
it's so unfair. And And I think there's a place as well in the unfairness. Mm-hmm. I really think God is okay with us being a little bit angry.
Yeah.
Tim Keller shared this the other day. I don't know if you saw this.
No, I did not. You just said Tim Keller, who passed lately.
Passed away. But it was a video, obviously, he shared, and it was thrown around the internet for a bit. He said he never understood Job until one of his mentors said, he didn't understand Job because at the end of Job, God says, hey, Job, look, in all of this, you didn't sin. Mm-hmm. And he asked the question, well, hold on. Didn't Job basically accuse God and get angry with God and, you know, kind of throw a tantrum like Jonathan did a little while ago? Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like a pity party. Didn't he sin in that regard? And his mentor said, no, being angry with God is not a sin. Ignoring God is the sin. If you think of sin as that which removes you from the presence of God, to be angry with God is actually to engage. Mm-hmm. It's like Jacob wrestling and just saying, God, I'm not letting go till you bless me.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I think it's okay. God can handle the anger. God can handle the frustration. But when we go silent on God or when we just remove our presence from God, I think that's more the danger than being upset with him.
Yeah, man.
It was just a thought I had.
No, it's just good. I mean, Tim Keller, good Lord. He was so good, man.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Miss him.
You
can go back and look so many things that he did. There's just so many incredible interviews he's done and so much wisdom and just insight on things like that.
And unfair. So, you know, it just feels like he died before. He had so much to give, it felt like. But
still
obviously
to give, yeah.
Yeah, and he was retooling all the time and rethinking things through and provoking. Some of his books have been really provocative, but a helpful way. That unfair thing is really interesting. But philosophically speaking as well, I think it's worth talking about. To say something is unfair or fair, I think is the same language as something that is just or unjust, right? So I didn't deserve this. This is unjust has been done towards me. The scales are out of balance. Mm-hmm. When we say something is unfair, we're saying something is tipped the wrong way.
Yeah.
I think it's important to understand if you're not a Christian or you don't believe in God, the scales of fair and unfair or just and unjust, you actually don't have those categories. Mm-hmm. Because without God, you know, there is no objective truth. There's no sense of justification or what is right, what is wrong.
And it's just your moral code at that moment or how you feel.
Exactly.
Right? It's just how you feel.
Right. It's just how you feel. And because there's nothing deeper going on behind it. So I always find it encouraging when I find something that is unjust. I actually find that as part of the Holy Spirit in me going, there's something about this that's broken. Mm-hmm. And I'm recognizing that because of the Spirit that dwells inside of me.
Yeah.
If without the Spirit, I have no justification to say this is unrighteous or this is righteous.
Yeah.
Those are Christian categories.
Yeah.
And without God, you have no morality. You can only say, I think it is or I feel it is subjectively, but you can't actually make the case that it's objectively unjust.
That's right.
It's just atoms and synapses. It's pure luck and chance. You know, your body is just formed by random luck and it'll disappear when you go and that's it, you know, but the Christian believes in something behind it as well. And so I've always taken encouragement when I found something unjust to go, actually, that's actually part of God awakening what should be right inside of my heart. And it's okay to have a righteous anger about things that are unfair.
Oh, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would think so. Just from what we've seen, the atrocities recently in our world.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. If you're not angry about that, there's something wrong with you.
There's really something wrong with you. And if you're, again, you know, I don't want to go back to that podcast that we just did. But it's just, you know, that kind of unjust atrocity that we witnessed in all of that is if you can't get broken over that or you're celebrating the fact that that was done because of over here you are short of I don't know. You're a wicked person. Yeah. I'm just going to tell you that. You are. You really are. You're a wicked individual because nobody celebrates that.
Yeah.
No one that has a conscience or even just a heart for God that would ever celebrate anything like that.
Yeah.
I just can't. Oof.
It's a dark vitriol sentiment to celebrate innocent, like you said, innocent blood.
Innocent.
That was shed.
Yeah. They're not, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that path.
Well, again, you should go back and listen if you haven't to last week's podcast where we do discuss sort of the war in Israel and just, I guess, a Christian perspective on how we're meant to hold all of these things. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, back to Joseph, that things go awry for him and it's just not fair. Like the things that don't go well for him is he shares a dream and the people who are meant to love and protect him the most.
Throw him in a pit.
And can anyone relate? Anyone? we're cruelest to the people we love most, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're vicious with our words.
It's true. I've been that way with my wife and kids at times, you know, having a frustrating time at whatever is causing the frustration and you find yourself taking it out on them with your words.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, Larry Kirk, that is not, they're not the problem.
Yeah,
you're the problem. You know what I'm saying? I'm the problem in that moment, you know? And it's just something where, you know, why do we do that? You know, why do we take all of that, whatever that's frustration out on someone that we actually genuinely say we love?
Yeah.
And it's just easier. There's no pushback in it to a certain degree. You know what I'm saying? They're going to love you anyway, but it's still too comfortable to do that. We shouldn't be lashing out in moments like that. Right. But yet the brothers do.
Right.
Now to defend the oldest, is it Reuben? Is Reuben the oldest in that story?
Yeah.
I'm
going to go yes.
Yeah. So Reuben is, if he's firstborn, then he has a responsibility over the whole family.
Right.
Right. And so in firstborn, if they decided to kill Joseph, that would have been on him.
Yes.
And he did not want that.
Well, he's the one that speaks out, doesn't he?
That's exactly right. And he's the one that says, no, let's throw him in a pit for a little bit and try to figure out what we need to do here.
Right. It goes from murder to selling off into slavery.
Selling off into slavery.
Which is, I guess, the mercy of...
I mean, it's better.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, this is the plan of God for Joseph. Right. But Reuben has some sense of, wait a minute, we probably shouldn't do this moment because of responsibility.
Well, do you think it's the responsibility or do you think it's just a self-preservation thing?
Both.
Yeah.
I think anytime a firstborn, you have responsibility. Like I'm firstborn in my family and I feel responsible for my family.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like if something happens.
I don't know what you're saying. I'm a middle child.
You're right. Never mind.
We just got ignored.
Yeah. As Shane Willard always said, you know, firstborn gets justice. Secondborn gets mercy. So John gets mercy. I get the justice.
I'm third. We just got ignored.
But you're still second born. You're considered, down. You still get mercy.
Right.
But I get the justice of everything. So that means the responsibility is mine. So if something happens to my parents, well, I'm going to take the responsibility of what I need to do with their estate, with their things, so I have the responsibility of doing that.
Right.
And it's in a sense that's biblical, you know?
Yes.
And so in moments like that, I would think he would get the justice if something happened to Joseph that where his brothers decided to kill him and dad found out that it would not go well for him.
Right. And of course, at the end of the story, he's at Joseph's mercy completely.
Completely.
It's such a turnaround.
Well, Joseph was shown even mercy in moments there as well, like with God working in that moment. And so he, you know, God did something in him, obviously, at the back end of that to show mercy to his brothers, where he could have been visceral and had hate in his heart toward him for sure.
Right.
I think with, you know, with moments like that, in that when they threw him in the pit, it's that moment of we can't. There was just a deterrent there.
Yes,
with Reuben.
Yeah. There's definitely
Reuben.
Conflict
sure
inside
Reuben,
of his.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. Exactly. That. Yeah. There was also he also drew another insight out, which I kind of heard before, and parallels between Joseph being sort of a picture of Christ, this idea of when we read the story, we tend to identify with Joseph, like, oh, unfair things have happened to me. And he said, actually, for most people, we're not Joseph in the story. Joseph did nothing wrong. Yeah. Yet we often can't say that of our lives.
If you listen to the whole message, you're like Joseph through the whole thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You're thinking
you're Joseph the whole time.
Yeah. And then he drops a bomb right in the middle and it's really short.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful little insight, this idea that we're actually the cupbearer. Mm-hmm. We're not Joseph. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that he asks, he didn't say this, but I thought the one thing that Joseph asked was, remember me. And I thought that's such interesting that he drew a parallel between Jesus and this sort of idea of remember me. And then Jesus's last interaction with somebody who was another prisoner at Jesus and says, remember me. Mm-hmm. And there was mercy wrapped up in that.
One on the cross.
Yeah, yeah. Remember I was like, me. Oh, you missed a trick there. You could have.
Yeah.
But there's a beautiful parallel. This idea of somebody who did nothing wrong ends up in the darkest prison only to free the prisoner who has done something
just like
wrong.
Jesus, man.
Yeah, just like Jesus.
Yeah.
And that was a great insight, beautiful picture.
Really good.
Kind of this foreshadowing, if you like.
Yeah, that was such a good analogy.
Yeah,
God, that was so good right there. Yeah. I was like, I was ready to come out of my seat right there. I was like, so good, man. I just never saw it that way before.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew Joseph was a quote unquote type of Christ.
Right.
You know, that kind of analogy or thought. But that really sealed the deal.
Yeah.
You know, it brought it home in that moment.
Right.
Just offering for, like, just remember me when but elevates him and sends him on his way and nobody remembers Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And maybe there's another parallel there as well, yeah. Like with the cupbearer, like God forgives us of our sin. How often in moments of unfair or unjust do we forget that?
Boom.
That goes out the window immediately.
Yeah.
You know, it's the perspective thing, isn't it? Like that's what Amanda said, you know, with all the water that was going on, she's like, in perspective, this is a couple days of hassle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Compared to what's happening in Israel or in Gaza right now, let's just hold the perspective and go, hold on, we are ridiculously blessed, unbelievably blessed.
Yes.
God has saved us. God has delivered us. Jesus has done, he's brought us out of the prison. He's given us new life. Let's remember.
Yeah.
Remember that, because as soon as he leaves the prison, he forgets.
Forgets.
The first day, day one.
Forgets.
As soon as I'm in traffic, I forget.
I forget. That's why I have this little, somebody bought this for me from the church, and I have this little Jesus guy hanging from my mirror.
The conviction.
Yeah. Yeah. And it captures, like, Jesus is pointing and it says, I saw that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like accountability. Every time somebody cuts me off, Jesus is like looking at me like in this little, it's actually an air freshener, right? It's a little Jesus hanging there and it says, I saw that.
I take my cap off and just hide. Like, don't look at this, Jesus. Don't look at me that way.
Don't look at me. Did you hear that? I know you saw that, but did you hear that? You know what I'm saying?
Tell him, stop it, Jesus. I can't handle this.
No, but that's such a good, there's so much wrapped into that story and what a great perspective he brought out in that moment, that we're not Joseph, but we are at times, we are Joseph at times, but really we're the cupbearer and that goes on and really forgets sometimes even what Jesus has actually done for us.
Right. Right.
And how he's brought us out of that prison and out of that pit and out of those things. And we tend to forget all that he's done.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we just, like, if you look back at your life right now and where you were 10 years ago versus where you are today and what you've come through and all those things and what God has brought you through and what he's blessed you with, it's like, it's really incredible.
It's night and day.
Yeah.
And you have to step back and give that time and thought. And I just like that cupbearer. Cupbearer partners and works for the king.
Yeah.
Does something offensive to the king.
Yeah.
But then gets reinstated to work with the king. I mean, it's such an obvious parallel somehow. Yeah, we all kind of miss it and go, but I'm the main character.
Well, everybody wants to be Joseph.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the ego in all of us, isn't it? This story is obviously all about me.
Because I'm going to rule and reign later. Right, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm going to be number two.
I'm going to be on top.
Yeah, yeah. You know, wait, I'm pretty sure Jesus is at the right hand, you know, not not Jonathan.
That's right. That's right. What would you say to someone who, you know, has went through some unfair events in their life recently and are feeling that way? You know what I'm saying? Like, where are you, God, in this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what are you working actually in my life? Because I think there is time where, you know, and I think he mentions that in the message this past weekend where he talked about the pain, you know, that we're all going to experience pain.
Yeah.
You know, and I've said this recently even too, that we're gonna go through pain. And if Jesus learned through suffering, we're going to learn through suffering at times in our own life. What would you say to someone who's really struggling with that thought right now?
Yeah, I mean, enter into it. I mean, you're allowed to be angry, I think, is the first thing. Like we said, there's permission to be mad, to permission to feel whatever you feel. Here's the thing about feelings. They're valid. Like, you can be upset, disappointed, jaded, all of that. But they don't tell the whole story. They're just signposts. And so just feel it without judging it. Don't say it's wrong to feel disappointed or I have to feel a certain way. You don't have to feel anything. Your feelings are just indicators of how you're perceiving the world right now. And so I think it's okay to feel all of that without judgment. They're not good. They're not bad. They just are. They are what they are. But I would say this, and he made a real point of saying this, that in your anger, in your frustration, in your disappointment, don't lose your integrity. Mm. Because that's what I find, that's the pitfall that most people fall into, is they get angry and then they justify losing their integrity.
Yeah.
And the argument inside of our heads goes somewhat like this. Well, you didn't uphold your end of the bargain, so I'm not going to uphold mine.
That's
you,
right.
You promised in like, we have this idea of you promised to bless me, protect me, you know, all, whatever it is, we tell ourselves that that's God's side of things. He has to uphold that.
That's right.
And then the first thing we do is, you know, we end up in Potiphar's wife's bedroom, but we justify it. Well, like God has ignored me, so I'm going to ignore God.
Yeah.
And it's a very childish, when you think about it, kind of reaction. And I would say you have permission to be mad and to vent and to talk to God. You don't have permission or be guarded against allowing yourself and opening yourself up to destructive things for your own life.
Yeah.
And that's the point. That's the vulnerable place you're in right now as the oak sapling. Yeah. There's a lot of vulnerability at that point. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be just very guarded around your environments, who you're around, who's speaking into your life. Are people speaking more hatred and frustration and just building up a case for you? Or are people speaking life? They're there with you.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say to somebody right now. If you're feeling that, you're allowed to feel it, but guard yourself and guard your environments.
Yeah. He made a statement to that, what you're saying. He said, trusting God is trusting God's timing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's totally, if you're going to trust God, then you're going to trust his timing.
Yeah.
And it's not always our time.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always on my time.
Yeah.
And that is very frustrating for people.
Right.
Especially a culture in a world where we can just, you know, get it at our fingertips at whatever moment. Like, we can have a box sitting on if I want coffee, I can have it sitting on my front doorstep today.
Right.
Clicking the
two
clicks away, and there it is. It's there when I get home today.
Yeah.
You know, so it's such a fast thing, and I know we talk about that at nauseam, but it is in our culture. It's ingrained in, particularly our Western culture, that is just there. That there's no patience in the timing of God's plan for our life, and so over seasons of time, we get frustrated. And like you just said, you know, we have something unfair that happens to us, and it feels like it's the end of that plan that God has for us. And, and we take a step back, and it's like, man, God, I thought you were for me, you know, apparently you're not. And, you know, you're against me, you know,
yeah.
And
we become the victim.
Yeah. We're the victim. And, you know, that victim mentality is huge in our world. You know,
yeah.
We play the victim, when we should be the victor, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
God has so much for us, but even in that, like we just don't trust God's timing for it.
Yeah.
And we're all guilty of that at times, but, he did make a statement too at the back end. He said, God's plan for me isn't about me.
Yes. Yeah. 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 We've preached that. I think both of us have at points, you know,
for sure.
The problem with the prayer, what's God's plan for my life, is it's three words too long for my life.
For my life. Yeah.
It's the egocentric, individualistic Western prayer that God has designed an elaborate thing for me because it's all about me, you know, rather than, what's God's plan?
Mm-hmm.
Not for my life, just what's God's plan?
Yeah.
And how am I the cog in the wheel? How am I the member of the body? How am I the brick in the temple? And where do I sit? Where is my place within that? Rather than all of these temples are built for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or this whole body is here to serve me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're not the whole body.
And that's that consumer mentality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's that consumer mentality that we have. And I think that's dying out a little bit, specifically in the church world.
Yeah.
I think we're getting to the place where there's almost like a line drawn in the sand, you know, and that consumer Christianity is kind of dying out.
Right.
I just think it's the separation of our world right now. And in the Christian world, I could say that my perspective is that serving, giving your life for something greater, laying down your, like, it's more biblical. It's more disciple. It's more discipleship driven. It's not my will, Lord, but your will be done in my life. And I think that is shifting that way. And I think it has to shift that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the world to be a better place, we got to get out of our own way, so to speak.
Right.
That consumer, it's about me. This is about what can I get out of the message today? Who's preaching today? Is Larry preached? Oh, I didn't want Larry to preach today. I wanted this person to preach. It's not about that. Oh, I didn't like that song. That's such a shallow view of church world living. You know, it's like that's just consumerism. Mm-hmm. And I think we're really, as a church, I think we're even making that clearer. In our own church.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak for the big C, the big church, but I can speak for our own personal church I think we're clearing the lines of that.
Yeah.
That it's not about us. It's about the world. It's about the moment where Joseph comes to that place of second in command. And what he's doing is not just for himself.
Right.
It is not just for his brothers. It's not just for his family. It's actually for the world at that moment in that particular region.
That's the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
The miracle isn't so much God saved one man. The miracle is God used one man to feed nations like all around him to help everybody. And that's the willingness. When we give ourselves over to God's plan, that then we find our lane within that plan, and we can do incredible things individualistically, but not for us, not for our own glory, not for our own, you know, to have a bigger mansion or a bigger house or more cars or anything else. The idea is to serve people, to bring God's kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. You know, that's the goal at the end of the day. And I think you're absolutely right. I hope we're moving away from consumerism as a whole in Western church and Western thinking. There's a great book written by a Japanese theologian called Love Walks at 3 miles an hour. Mm. Or Love is 3 miles an hour, which is the speed of walking.
Okay.
And it's just this idea of slowing down. I'm actually getting ready to do a whole talk on, you know, the ruthless elimination of hurry. And just how do we slow down a little bit? How do we stop thinking about what I can get out of this?
Mm.
How does this serve me? How does this entertain me? Which is so much of what you're saying, what church is about now, right?
Yeah.
You know, entertain me, make me laugh, make me cry, make me feel all these emotions, make me feel good about myself so that I can get on with my life.
Feel like Gladiator.
Yeah, right.
Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained? You know what I'm saying? It's almost like that.
It feels that way.
We're back in the Coliseum, and now we're looking to the paid professional to entertain us for an hour.
That's right.
And if it's not entertaining, I'll go somewhere else and find a better speaker or a better worship team.
Sure.
Rather than going, hold on, this is my opportunity here to center my heart, to hear from God, to be a part of something bigger than just myself.
Yeah.
You know, all the reasons that church exists.
Yeah.
I'm getting on a rant here.
No.
But consumerism, I think, has to die with inside of ourselves. And we have to slow down at a pace where we can actually hear God.
The reason why I say it for us, again, the little c, us at Central.
Yeah.
The reason why I say that is just from the perspective of where people are in their serving and how our church serves. And
what do you mean specifically?
Specifically just serving in categories of kids, serving in groups, serving like all capacities, missions, everything, all the capacities that you can serve in at Central, coffee bar, parking lot, hosting. Like, you know, most of our church, if you look at our church, over half of our church serves in some capacity.
Yeah. Wow.
Which is crazy to think about that numerically. And it's trending, continuing to trend up, though. And the people that are coming that are new to Central, who are just finding their faith, want to give themselves something greater than themselves. And so they're stepping into those roles and serving.
Right.
Right. And they haven't made it about what's in this for me.
Yeah.
They're really turning that around and like, how can I impact people around me?
Right.
What can I do? And what can I do that outlives my life? You know? And I think we're seeing that more and more within our church. And I, you know, hopefully we're wrapping the right language around that for our church to be a part of, participate in. But I think, you know, again, I can't speak for the big C, but I think for our church, we've really done our due diligence and hard work at making sure that this isn't about one person on the stage. It's not just about Larry Kirk. It's about, you know, because there are churches like that, right? There's our churches are focused around the person,
right?
You know, and that person leaves, that church falls apart.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yes.
We're not wrapped that way.
Right.
We're wrapped in other air. Like everybody is still. If something happens to Larry Kirk, the church continues to go and it continues to grow.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's the most important thing.
Yes.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah. We don't follow. I mean, we follow leaders, but we follow leaders following a leader, Jesus.
Correct.
You know.
Yeah.
And so there's always somebody ready, you know, to continue
helping
push people along to follow Jesus. And I think just people in general are just kind of sick and tired of the secular narrative of individual identity and individual self and what serves me. And so now, like you say, new people are coming into church and they're looking for community. They're looking for something bigger than just themselves. Because we're starting to see the fruit of what happens in a culture that's just self-obsessed.
That's right.
Self-obsessed with letting everybody know who they are or what their identity is or what their politics are or why they're right and why you can't infringe on their rights. People are just kind of sick and tired of that. And it seems like people are coming in now with an openness to go, I want to serve something bigger than just me.
Yeah. 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 It's, Kerry Newhall said it like this the other day. I think I'm going to get this right. He said, attendance doesn't drive engagement. Right? Engagement in the future will drive attendance. So it's engaging people.
Yeah.
Right? It's relational. Just like you said, it's community. They want to be a part of something that's making a difference. It's making a dent in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that to me is the beautiful part about our church and what we're trying to do is like, okay, we're seeing that now. We're starting to see it's not just about attendance driving and get like, okay, let's get as many people in and maybe 10% of those will serve.
Right.
Right. And that number will help us and, you know, will get us down where we need to be. Now we're actually engaging and that, you know, engagement's happening and where it's driving the attendance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So if you focus on engagement and health, attendance will naturally grow.
That's right.
If you focus on attendance, you won't necessarily get engagement.
No. And really when you're talking about that, when I talk about engagement too, it's not just, you know, about them serving, whatever, getting a part of something. And it is that's the most important thing that we want people to do. We want people to lead people to discover and fulfill their purpose in Christ. We want that to take place, but it's really them. There's something about our church when you come in, they're engaged with it. Mm. Like, I feel like this is home. I feel like this is family. I feel like that language is all over first-time attenders at our church.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And making them feel that way so that we can accomplish everything that God has planned for our life.
Yeah.
You know.
And everyone's welcome. You know, just like Joseph at the end of it, he takes the sinners, the broken people, the mm-hmm. people who should have loved him but betrayed him.
That's right.
And he just said, you know, your family. Like come here. Like the house of God, the church, is a covering. It's mm-hmm. protection. It's family. It's encouragement. You know, it's uplifting. It's challenging. Mm. It's irritating at times. But, you know, that's what family is. And I think, you know, there's... Mm. Just to draw it back to Joseph, there's mm-hmm. this beautiful picture at the end of them just sitting at the table, yep. all together, yep. fellowshipping together. And that's, again, another picture of the church, you know, in relationship mm-hmm. with one another.
Yeah, because God's plan for me is not just about me.
It's about the redemptive plan for the whole family and beyond.
Beyond, yeah.
There we go.
Church, man. Mic drop. That's it.
I can't jot this one.
Yeah, we'll get in trouble, actually.
Alex, we do that. Alex, don't you dare.
Don't you dare do that, guys. Well, this concludes this podcast at this time. We hope that in some way today this enriched your life.